Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here this evening. We are going to be going over Genesis 6 and 7. What I've got written on the board is kind of what I want to look at. There's so many things. You've got the story of Noah. You've got the two or three chapters that talk about the flood. But, of course, it's a challenge to our modern mind with all the details and how it's just, you know, basically a legend or a mythical story. Which draws us to look at it like it's a historical event, and can we prove it? And once you start going down that line, as many of you know, with the ark demonstrations or displays, some people have dedicated large amounts of their life to studying the historicity of Noah's flood. And there's a lot of evidence, if it be in the fossil layer, if it be historical, if it be practical, how could this have happened? And if you want to consider it a myth and just a legend, then there's nothing we can do to help you. But if you wonder, how can this story stand up? How can Jesus refer to the days of Noah as if they were historical, and Noah as a historical figure? Peter refers to Noah and says it will be like, you know, just like the second coming. They'll forget about that, just like they forget about the flood in the final days. So what I'm going to do, and we'll be looking at some of the text, but I want to point out these things tonight as we go through this, the legends that are around the world. Again, we'll talk about that. The ark, the measurements that I messed up on last week, we'll look at the measurements of the ark, give a little bit of detail on how it's plenty big, and it's plenty, it's well designed so that it will float. It's not like some of the canoes and logs and things that they floated on in the legends. The animals, how did all the animals get on the ark? We'll talk about that. The dates, just kind of show you all the events that take place, because it's incredibly detailed of telling you the year of the flood, Noah's 600th year, which we can figure that out to be 2458 BC, if you just use the Bible. It tells you the month of the flood and the day that different events happened on the ark during the flood. And then the water and where the water came from and what would have happened to the earth. Now, that's a lot of material. This is a daunting task for me as I've been studying this, because each of these areas, the continental plates, the water, volcanic activity, how it began, how it settled out, how you can still see the remains of it today, is really, you can dedicate your lifetime to that study. The same thing with the animals, the ark, the legends, all these things are, it's not just a matter of, you know, I can read the text of Scripture, but then to take these things alongside, this is enormous amounts of study. Not that I've done the study, but to do an adequate job and not just sound like you're some, you know, Sunday school teacher rant and raving about your opinion, to get this all documented, there is some great literature, some great books, some very qualified people. And I would refer you to some, again, I don't want to go to social media or anything like this and say that's the way to go, but you go to YouTube or you go to some places where you can get videos with more than just an old guy scribbling on a whiteboard with a black marker, and you can see their displays of the continental plates and their examination of the fossil record and interviewing different scientists at different levels of education, different areas of expertise. And it's amazing. You can watch hours, and you should be able to walk away fully convinced that the flood of Noah and the details here are very logical. They make a lot of sense. And I'll try to do a little bit of that tonight as we go through this. I've handed out to you just five copies. I only made five copies, but I handed out four copies. I've got this copy here. And this is the flood legends. It's amazing. Probably the whole world has stories of the flood legends. I've got two charts right there. I copied these, and I tell you where I got them from. But the story of the flood if the Bible happened as we think it did, after the flood, there's one family. They begin to multiply, fill the earth, until after in about 100 years, there's the Tower of Babel takes place. Everyone's got the same language, the same culture, and they're attempting to build the Tower of Babel. God confuses their language, and they begin to scatter and go out and fill the earth. The ideal of the languages being confused is also found in cuneiform writings. It's not like it's just the only place they find it is the Bible. It appears to be a logical thing that took place where there's confusion and people dispersed. But when they dispersed, they took with them the story of their forefather and everybody's forefather in the last 100 years at the time of the Tower of Babel would have been Noah himself, and they would have, you know, scattered around and took with them the story. And here you've got down here the details of the story. If it involves man's transgression, divine destruction, a favored family, an ark being provided, destruction by water, humans being saved, animals being saved, it's a universal flood, landing on a mountain, birds being sent out, survivors worshiping, and then divine favor, all of those are located in, for example, the Assyrian-Babylonian culture. And then you just move on across that chart and you can see where some of them fit, all the way from Greece, Egypt, Italy, Russia, China, India. And now you get into America. And again, I'll show you here in a moment. When the missionaries got to America and they began to meet the tribes, the different tribes, it's an amazing amount across Canada, up to Alaska, all across the Americas, down through Central America, Mexico, down into Brazil. They've got stories of the flood. In fact, if you take the notes I handed out to you today, and you look at the very back page, these are your notes that we're using for tonight's. The very back page, there's a chart I made a long time ago, and I put a little white dot. This is a little, that used to be an overhead transparency. You put it on an overhead projector, and I put dots on it when I taught way back in the 80s where the flood legends come from. Then that list, 1 through 22 on page 14, it says ancient cultures, traditional names for the biblical Noah. These are the names of, in their stories, they still remember the name. Now again, it's not Noah, but they remember the man and they remember his name, and you go through there. Hawaii, it's Nuu, which is pretty close to Noah. And then Scandinavia, Bergelmer. Acadia, that's Etnapistum. That's the one that from the Mesopotamian, the Akkadian, and that's he's in the flood legends, the flood tablets. All the way down, Western Australia's got a name. China, Fuhi, if that's how you'd say it. And now we get into one of the tribes from Arizona. His name was Montezuma. The Apache, Keterstan, however you'd pronounce that. And you can see all from a tribe in North Dakota. The Fox tribe in Wisconsin and Michigan, they got his name. The Cree tribe coming out of Canada, they still know his name. And this was from the 1700s and 1800s when they are telling the missionaries that come and they came to the tribes, they would share stories. Some of them were painters and they were painting the tribe. Some of them were photographers taking photographs. Some of them were missionaries trying to communicate with them. And they would exchange stories and they already had a story. And the stories match in many cases. And if you look on that page, the big page I gave you, let's go back to where you can see, go all the way down, look at those names, go all the way down to Brazil. Pay, P-A-Y-E, was Noah from Brazil. The tribe in the Amazons, S-I-N-A-A, Sina, all the way down. And again, I quit because I ran out of time. I literally ran out of time. If you look on this bigger peg that I gave you, I didn't hand it out to everybody. You don't have one, Prim. I can give you this here in just a moment. But if you turn the first page there, there's flood legends. Hawaii, American Plains, Peru, Hudson Bay, Scandinavia, Tanzania, Acadia, Western Australia. And then there's a painter. His name was George Catlin, lived 1796 to 1872. And he says, after he went through and was painting images of the tribes, amongst 120 different tribes, he says, that I have visited in North and South and Central America. Imagine that, in the 1800s, traveling to North America, South America, Central America, meeting the Native Americans. What a journey. and was painting them. He says, not a tribe exists that has not related to me distinct or vague traditions of such a calamity in which one or three or eight persons were saved above the water on top of a high mountain. Now, how that all takes place isn't, you know, again, it would be 4,000 years later after the story from a land in Mesopotamia. Now they're telling the story in Canada, Alaska, somewhere in North America, in the United States, Central America, South America, and they're telling the story that they've heard for 4,000 years, and it's not exactly the way the Bible is, but it's close enough. It's like, wait, and it talks about a destruction, and he says that. There's Southwest United States flood legends, and this, I could read all these too. I'd like to discuss them all, but it goes all the way through. Then on page 4, Pacific Northwest United States flood legends. These are from the native tribes. These are not people telling you, rehashing the biblical account. They heard the story of Noah, and now they're telling it back to you in their own new, they've adjusted it to their culture. This was here before the you know, Columbus came, before the Europeans came. The Americas were filled with traditions of a flood account where it was a universal flood. Some survived, and they tell you the details of what they remember. The Pawnee in Nebraska, the Lakota, Midwest United States flood legends on page 7, page 8, Southeast United States flood legends, page 9, Eastern Central Canada flood legends, Western Canada flood legends, page 10. Then we go to the Arctic region flood legends. A person named McNair, Wright, 1885, says, some of these tribes of Alaska have not only tradition of the Noahic deluge, or I would say the Noah's flood, but also of the original chaos. I mean, they've got the Genesis 1 story, the first dividing of the waters and the creation of the heavenly bodies, plants, animals, and men in nearly the mosaic order of succession. And these traditions have evidently no touch of, quote, white man's teaching or white men's teaching. It was there for centuries, for millennium before the white man got there with the Bible. It's like, oh yeah, we can tell you where the creation came from. And they have the same order going all the way back to the original chaos. And so that's a quote. We see another quote on page 12. Mexican flood legends. There's 1, 2, 3. Aztecs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We keep going. We got like the Mayans, the Caribbeans. There's 15 flood legends there. South American flood legends. And there's 1, 2, 3 pages, 4 pages of South American flood legends. So I just want, that's just, again, notice most of that was, in fact, that was all in the Americas. We haven't talked about, except just in passing, here, you want to pass this back to Prim so he can, we haven't even talked about coming out of Egypt and the areas in Mesopotamia that there's traditions there also. So nonetheless, that's just introducing some of the legends. And you can see on the back of page 14, once again, the names of Noah that are there. All right, let's go to page 1 of the notes. And this is the timeline that we've got here that I've adjusted, that you've seen starting at, I just cut out the middle. But you can see, I want you to focus on Noah right there. In the year 3000 BC, Noah was born and lived 950 years, but he was born before 3000 BC. He's going to live up until 2108 BC. But what I've added on there, you've definitely got the flood dotted line coming down, 2458 BC, the flood line. And that was in Noah's 600th year. So it began in Noah's 600th year. It ended in his 601st year. So it began in 2458 BC, ended in 2457 BC. But remember, we say in those verses last week and the week before, God says a man's years will be 120. If that means that he's telling Noah, man's years on earth are going to be 120 years, and then I'm going to send the flood. Well, that's what I've done there with a light gray line, is I've gone back 120 years before 2458 BC, which would be the year 2578 BC, and that would be when Genesis 6:3 was spoken. If the 120 years means before the flood, 120 years, and the flood date that I've got here is correct, 2458. See, there's if, we're not sure, you know, I'm just using the best I can. Then we know when Genesis 6 was spoken to Noah was 2578 BC, and Noah would have been 480 years old, and it's about 20 years before Shem, Ham, and Japheth are born, because they're born in his 500th year. So that just kind of gives you a little more perspective on the dates and the time right there, and I've just added that to that chart. Chapter 6, verse 3, it's at the bottom of the page there. Okay, turn the page, page 2, that's, we've seen that before. Page 3, we've seen that before. Coming over to page 5, chapter 6, verse 15, we'll pick up where I failed last week. And again, there's many better drawings online and in these actual academic books that are studying this. This is my own drawing. I think the measurements are correct. If the cubit is 18 inches, then I think this is correct. The cubit could be bigger, like, what was it, 21, 24 inches, like the royal cubit? So there's an 18-inch cubit, which is the traditional, and then there's a one that's a royal cubit that's a little bit bigger. And so this would be the smaller size of, and this is what many Bibles have, these feet, these measurements in it as a translation. But the ark could have been slightly bigger than this if you're using a different cubit. But nonetheless, it's 300 cubits long, which is 450 feet. Last week, I'd multiplied by 18. I forgot to divide the numbers by 12. So 150 yards. It would be 45 feet tall and then 75 feet wide. And now I'm just drawing a rectangle box. I noticed in the book that you shared with me from the Ark Museum, what's it called? The Ark Museum? The Ark Encounter. That they went to a lot of trouble saying it's not just a box. And they designed it, they described how it would be like a more ship-like. Again, not being able to drive through the waves, but being able to ride like the waves. And it's a lot more classy designed. We should be to the point that we understand that Noah wasn't a barbaric caveman, that he was somewhat of an expert, and he lived, you know, 500 years before the flood, so had plenty of time to pick up skills. Remember Jabal, Jubal, and Tubal-Cain, they had musical instruments, they had developed metallurgy. All that's going to be wiped out in the flood and only carried over into the new world with Noah and his family, so there's going to be some, you know, memory they're using, or they're going to have to be rediscovering some things. How advanced was society before the flood? We don't know. I mean, but I would say that it's much more advanced than our modern culture would want to give them credit for. And then you can see it's 75 feet wide, so it's going to float very well. I put in there because as you read through this, it talks about windows and a roof, and those little white rectangles would be a representation of some kind of windows that they could open up and let light come in. And then on the top, there's a removal of the roof where they could actually prop open the roof when they were ready and let light come in after, of course, the rain stopped. But it would be sealed up very tight up until that point. And then the dotted lines represent the 1, 2, 3 levels that are on that would be floors. And within there, they're going to be having on each of those floors, they're going to be some kind of, the word in the Hebrew can be translated like nest, but they're like cages or little places for the animals to be. And when you think about the animals being on the ark, remember, and I did some reading on this also this week, and again, there's so much good information out there, I'm not going to be able to just tell it to y'all, but the concept of hibernation or animals, when they're in a situation where they're closed down, locked up, they go into a state of hibernation, or they go into a place of just, how do you say the word, lethargic. They're just kind of passive. They're just going to lay around. There's nothing to do. And so it's not like they've got these animals on, you know, racetracks and getting them out walking their dogs. And it's like the animals are just surviving for a year, which is not unusual. Their eating habits may change. But nonetheless, it's not as complicated as people want to make it, but yet at the same time, if they're going to take care of them, they're going to have, you know, ventilation. They're going to have a food system. They're going to have water, fresh water. They're going to have some kind of drainage system. And all this is going to be managed by eight people. Plus, they've got to take care of themselves. And so however Noah built this boat, this ark, it's probably not just a rectangular box that's going to float, although it is barge-like and able to stay afloat just with these proportions. It's going to have to be designed in such a way that feeding, watering, cleaning, keeping ventilation, getting light in, all these things are going to be able to be maintained easily by eight people, which, again, is very possible, especially if you're interested in researching and finding out. I got 4 points written down there. Volume size was 1.54 million cubic feet. The ark would be equal to 522 railroad stock cars. So figure out a train, 522 stock cars on a railroad train, and fill those up with animals. That's how much room you've got. One railroad stock car can hold 240 sheep. Now again, you're thinking, how are they going to put all those animals as big as an elephant? Okay, they're going to need two elephants. You know, they're going to need two giraffes, or the species or a kind of a giraffe. The average size of an animal, many of the scholars that have done this talk about, is a sheep. So you're figuring out the sheep, and then some animals are much smaller, more like a size of a rat, if you want to go with a rat. And so it's not like you're trying to get, you know, all these hundreds and hundreds of elephants on the ark. You're trying to get hundreds and hundreds of rats on the ark to keep the species going, or the animal going. So one stock car would hold 240 sheep. 522 stock cars could hold 125,000 sheep. And that's more than they're going to need. The ark has room for 125,000 sheep, the average size of the animal. This leaves room for 109,000 more average size animals. So 1.8 million species of organisms exist today. Let's talk about this, see if we can do this real quickly. 1.8, talking about species on the earth today, 1.8 million species. That's a lot of species to get on the ark. If that's the case, it's like we're going to run out of room. Except for the fact that 98% of the species are fish, invertebrates, or non-animals, like animals or bacteria. So when they talk about species, we're going to look at a chart on this. Species doesn't mean everything's an animal. Species would include bacteria, would be a type of a species. And so there's certain things that you're not going to have to take 1.8 million species on the ark. We'll take a look at this here in just a moment. I'll break this down in better detail. There are less than 34,000 species today that are land-dependent vertebrates. So if you're talking about today, there are 34,000 species on the earth today that apparently came from whatever made it through the flood. The ark needed to preserve the ancestors of 34,000 species. We'll look at that here in a minute with some more detail on that. Chapter 6, verse 16, I just got that there talking about the ark, and we read all this last week. Chapter 6, verse 16, "For behold, I'll bring a flood of water upon the earth to destroy all flesh, in which is the breath of life under heaven. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you." It's amazing, even over in America, in the Indian tribes, there is talk of a man and his wife and his three sons. China talks about, they've got a legend in China, a man, they've got his name, his wife, and then it says in China, three sons and three daughters made it through the flood on a boat. In fact, one of their symbols, the symbol, again, I'm pulling this off the top of my head, I read a book several years ago on the Chinese language, and the Chinese language, again, check me out on this because I'm talking off the top of my head. I think the word or the letter, the image for the word boat is something that has, it's a shape with eight figures on it. Something to this effect, meaning it's the image of the ark, which means boat in the Chinese language. Now, I wish I could thought of that ahead of time and had my book. I could show you the book I read. But it's all the they go back and they go through the Chinese letters of the alphabet on how many of them are biblically based. It's like this representation is a biblical representation in their original ancient language. Again, that's off the record. That's not on my notes. I just said that. But anyway, chapter 6, verse 20 says, of the birds according to their kinds, of the animals according to their kinds. That's, again, that's going to be a key phrase, kinds, of their kinds, of every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind, two of every sort shall come to you to keep them alive. Now, remember last week we talked about it, the continents is not divided up. The planet is not divided up in continents like it is. So, like, how's the penguin going to get all the way down here? It's like it's probably one landmass. It probably doesn't have the drastic climate change that we have from the Arctic to the Sahara, or the mountain ranges are not there as we know them yet. And so the animals are going to be of much more available. And what is on the ark is going to come off of the ark, and then you're going to have the species breeding for the next 4,000 years, including special, you know, creating of certain breeds of dogs and other animals. And so some of these specialty, even the animals are going to adapt to the cold climate or the hot climate or the mountains or, you know, by the seas. They're going to adapt to those areas and they're going to be adjusting. We do not believe in evolution. It's never happened. But we do believe in adaptation because we see adaptation. Adaptation is scientific. Evolution is a false religion. You can't see it. It's make-believe. But you can't see adaptation. So the animals that got off the ark, the animals that they've produced over 4,000 years of history may be slightly different and have different, maybe drastically different, and may have different eating habits as they've adjusted to their new climate that they came off. Because the climate's probably changed after the flood. Okay. Page 7. Chapter 6, verse 22, page 7, Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. Chapter 7, verse 1, then the Lord said to Noah, go into the ark, you and your household, for I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. Which sure seems to give the impression that Noah and his family were righteous in their behavior, following Yahweh and not going the way of the world. Chapter 7, verse 2, take with you 7 pair of all clean animals, male and his mate, and a pair of the animals that are not clean, male and his mate, and 7 pair of birds of the heaven also, male and female, to keep their offspring alive on the face of the earth. It appears that some of those clean animals, it either deals with clean for eating, or it deals with being clean as an acceptable sacrifice. The best bet would be they're not referring to being clean for eating, because remember, when they get off the ark, God says, now I've given you vegetation to eat. I give you now, you can now eat animals. It appears it wasn't God's will or in God's plan that man eat animals before the flood, if we read the verses that come after, which mean they're not clean animals to eat like you see in the Mosaic law, but clean animals that were used for sacrifices. And that matches all these ancient cultures. There were certain animals that the gods would accept, and Yahweh had his own. So the clean animals would probably be sacrificial animals. And when they get off the ark, the first thing they do is they save the animals so they can kill the animals in a sacrifice when they get off the ark. And many of the legends talk about them getting off the ark, and the first thing they do is sacrifice animals to God or the deities. In the Mesopotamian accounts, the deities are so mad at man because he's so noisy that they destroy man. One of the gods saves man, said, build an ark or build a boat, save the animals. And then after the flood, they've been without food, you know, because we're not talking biblical, we're talking Mesopotamian traditions and their gods. The reason you would offer animal sacrifice to the gods was that was their food. Well, man's been on an ark, and the world has been flooded now for this period of time. And when man comes off the ark, or this Noah comes off the ark and offers sacrifices, it says all the gods swarmed around like flies because they were so hungry, and they got upset with the gods that decided that they should flood man, because it's like, look, we've gone this whole length of time without any food. That was a stupid idea. So the gods were in a big argument on, let's not do this again because we need our food. Thank the man for bringing us food. in not quite a biblical analogy, but close enough where you've got a sacrifice, you got the gods involved. Nonetheless, I think we've got the accurate account in the book of Genesis. Chapter 7, verse 4, for in 7 days, now he's going to be on the ark, or he's told to get on the ark, for in 7 days I will send rain on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights, and every living thing that I have made I will blot out from the face of the ground. So, you've got the ideal, you've got 7 days to get on the ark. Some would say that you've got, you know, he's sitting on the ark waiting for 7 days. God apparently tells him to. Grandpa Methuselah has died, apparently. He's getting on the ark, and the water is going to come on the earth for 40 days. And this is now a very important question. How is this going to take place? You hear stuff. There's not enough water on the earth to cover the mountains. Okay, now I'm not sure how you're going to run that test. This last month or so in the news, they've discovered large amounts of water deep in the earth. Also, the shifting of the continental plates during the flood most likely made the mountains. You've got sea life fossils on the top of even Mount Everest. You've got fossils from the bottom of the sea. So that means Mount Everest was at one point underwater with sea life being fossilized in it. And it's like that on many mountains. So there has been, the sea level has gone up to the mountains. There's been a drastic change that's taken place, topography. And it's going to be like that when Jesus comes back. There's going to be a topography change. And we'll talk about that, the 40 days and 40 nights. And Noah did, chapter 7, verse 5, and Noah did all the Lord had commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the flood of waters came upon the earth. And Noah and his sons and his wife and the sons' wives with him went into the ark to escape the waters of the flood. We need to talk about those waters. I've got some information coming here. Of clean animals and of the animals that are not clean, of birds and everything that creeps on the ground. And now I've got listed for you the animals, classes of animals. And if you will allow me to struggle through this, I really wish, I could have brought a video and had you just like, you know, a 1960s science teacher in the classroom, get out your 16-millimeter projector and run the film. I used like that as teaching shop. I had one I showed every year for, I always look forward to it. Every new class, like it'd be safety, I'd go, I had this one video. It was the reel-to-reel 16-millimeter. I had to run it, click, 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 click. And it was always exciting because I had that day off. You know, you were going to watch safety, and you'd run that safety video. And I must have saw it like 150 times. Anyway, nonetheless, it'd be nice to show you a video just to communicate to you from an expert speaking about it than me. But you've got domain, kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species, and then breed. And here's how this works. The kingdom, all living things are divided into five kingdoms: animal, plant, fungi, whatever those other words are. We're not interested in plant or fungi or whatever those other words are. We're interested in animals. So there's the part of the animal kingdom. Then in the animal kingdom, you're going to have phylum. Phylum is more specific than kingdom, but less than class. There are 35 phyla in the kingdom of animals, including all organisms with the dorsal nerve cords, sponges, and arthropods. So now that's even too broad. That breaks down into class. An example of a class would be mammal. So there's going to be, for example, one of the classes on the ark is going to be mammal. But there's going to be other besides mammal. Now, under the mammal, there's going to be order. And order would be, for example, the carnivora, for example, dogs are in the order of carnivora. So you're going to have the order, and that would be, for example, canines or dogs are going to be from this, and there's going to be other orders that are coming out of this. Now, what we're getting down into, for example, at the very bottom there, and again, you know this, but I'm saying it so we got it documented, breeds, there's probably more than 34, I don't know, someone, a dog person knows, there's probably more than 34,000 breeds of dogs on the earth. I don't know how many breeds there are, but there's the toy poodles, there's the all kinds of poodle dogs. They breed them all together, make all these different types of dogs. You don't need all those. You need, of the canine, you need two of this canine. Well, let's go on. Then after that, the family of the animals is similar to the kind of animals that Noah put on the ark. So the thing we're probably getting very close to is the family of animals. And then the genus, or genus, is a group of animals that are very similar and most likely have a common ancestor. In contrast, the species is just one type of animal. For example, zebras are in the genus of equus. It's like horses. It's like, you know, zebras, horses, donkeys. The genus includes horse. Well, right there, horses, donkeys, zebras. And so you're going to be able to, through time, from that one genus, is get donkeys, horses, zebras are all going to be able to come out of that one pool. So you don't need two zebras and then every type of horse and all the different donkeys. And then there's going to be species. Species is a term used in the modern classification system. The Bible uses the term kind, most likely, even in the creation account and in the Noah's account, the kind. The created kind was much broader category than the modern term of classification species. And then from there, you've got breed. The breed is a collection of organisms within a species that have different characteristics as a result of selective breeding. A species is a group of creatures that may breed to generate viable offspring when they interbreed. And so you're breaking, going further down there where it's family or genus, where that is what you're going to be bringing on. You're not bringing, you know, fungus. You're not bringing the fish. You're not bringing some of these. You're bringing, you know, these categories like this. And to get, you know, the dog, potentially you need two canines. And from the two canines, you're going to get every breed of dog you've got today, 4,000 years later, including the wolves, the fox, if that's a fair way of saying it. Once again, it's beyond my, I can't even pronounce some of the words, it's beyond my understanding. Please watch a video if you're interested. But when we study the experts, when they talk about this, this is, you can mock it. You can mock this and say, how is he going to get all these animals? Well, 98% of them are fish and other animals that aren't going to need to be on the ark. And so it's going to be a very small amount of animals. Well, let's go to the next page. 1.8 million species of organism. I read this to you before. 98% are fish, invertebrates, non-animals like plants or bacteria. Less than 34,000 species today that are land-dependent vertebrates. The ark needed to preserve the ancestors of 34,000 species. And those 34,000 species, you're going to have a representative of that. That's most likely the average size would be a sheep, and that's fairly generous. It could be more like the size of a rat. Now, you're going to have things like elephants, even zebras. What produced the zebras that we see today may not have had the long neck on the ark. Again, it ruins all your Bible stories. We've got little Noah Ark storybooks and little Noah Ark toys. You've always got the zebra. You've always got the elephant. You know, those are the fun animals. But it's possible that you had a smaller, shorter-necked species that is going to, when it comes off the ark, because the climates have changed, the topography has changed, the continents have changed, that the giraffe is going to then adapt to its environment, and you have what we call giraffe today. Again, it would be interesting to see the animals that Noah's got on the ark compared to the animals we've got today. There's very clearly, there's been a, not an evolution, but there have been some kind of modifications that take place. Okay, the next things written down there, very similar again. I write these things, I think I've already said all of this. Let's see if it all, Noah did not have to take every species on the ark. Noah could have taken the genus on the ark and still preserve the species capability. Even in some cases, a family representative could be preserved the genus or the species. There are 8,000 genera, plural of genus, including extinct genera. Now you have the questions of the dinosaurs. Were the dinosaurs? I have no trouble in my mind thinking the dinosaurs were alive at this time. There's enough evidence in some kind of biblical accounts of these monsters, Leviathan, There's enough record of different drawings, cave drawings, or etchings, or even paintings of dinosaurs being seen by people before they were found in the fossil layers. And so it's possible that they just died out because the world could not maintain them. It's like, well, how do you get all these huge dinosaurs on the ark? Well, you didn't need to take the biggest, oldest dinosaur. You could have taken, you know, a smaller sample of them. Nonetheless, I can't answer that directly, but we do not need to think the dinosaurs all drown in the flood, or that you've got to have billions of years for the dinosaurs to live and go extinct. Going on, it says the ark. Okay, I've got all that written down. Okay, page 9, 10. Again, I really wanted to do a better job of talking about the animals, but that's, again, a little beyond my understanding and expertise. Now, that's the earth. Now, we have got continents on the earth. I've got a map here. This is out of the framework book that I made this many years ago. I just use because it's mine. I don't have to steal from somebody else. But those are an image of where continental plates are at. If you were to say, let's just go with, you know, there's one landmass on the earth. Now, again, I'm using a black marker on a whiteboard, and if I do like this right here, it looks like some kind of, you know, Wilson or something like that in a movie. But nonetheless, this is the earth, and this is the continent. There would be, underneath here, there was pressured water. We even see that the water was, you know, coming up as a mist. And the Eden, wherever Eden was at, there was water that came up, and water went out in four directions. So it wasn't water landing in snow on the mountains, melting, coming down, filling the rivers, and then going into the sea. Instead, the water was in the earth, and the rivers came up out of the earth like a spring. And in Eden, it went in four different directions. So even when you look at the Euphrates and Tigris River, they originate in the mountains, and the water flows into the rivers and then into the Persian Gulf. That may be a reverse of what was taking place here. People talk about salt water. Salt water in the oceans, as time goes on, it gets saltier and saltier because, like the Dead Sea, the salt's been coming into the Dead Sea for all these years and going nowhere, so it's dead. There's nothing to grow there. The water in the oceans, you can also measure the water, the salt in the oceans. And if the earth, here's just again, can't go into great detail on this, but if the earth is millions of years old and the rivers have been running into the ocean for millions of years, logic would say the oceans should be like the Dead Sea, which means the rivers haven't been running for millions of years taking salt deposits into the ocean. They've been running for a certain amount of time, but not to a time where you're going to kill everything. If it's a million, if we've had water draining into the oceans for millions of years, that it should be so full of salt and minerals that nothing can live. When this water comes down, there may have been salt water, potentially with water draining, but there's going to be an enormous amount of fresh water inundate, and the salt water and fresh water are going to be mixed together. And someone say, well, all the freshwater fish would die and all the saltwater fish would die. It's like, not necessarily. It may have been diluted enough, or the saltwater fish may have developed since the flood. So all these things, we're talking about a world that was before the flood. Anyway, I'm going to try to say this the best I can. The best thing to do is watch a video and watch someone that really knows what they're talking about say this. But as we read this, page 10, chapter 7, verse 11, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month on the 17th day. That's pretty precise. I'm going to give you that date here in a minute. On that day, the fountains of the great deep burst forth. Now, the fountains of the great deep were what was pushing up and causing the rivers to flow out of Eden. There's pressurized water in the earth. Well, on this day, the fountains of the deep burst forth. They broke open. And what would have taken place on this continent is there would have been water blasting up out of these fractures or these continental plates and water spraying up. Don't like, oh, look, it's starting to leak, like you got water coming in your basement. You think we ought to get this taken care of? This is like blasting up all that water pressurized, and it's going not just coming out and flooding, but going up into the air. Now, if there's something over the earth, the water above the earth and the water below, between the sky, there's water above and below. Again, that's what it says. If you want to go with that, it appears there's some kind of water suspended in the air, not just clouds and rain clouds, but there's some kind of water that was placed there, almost like a canopy of protection from the sunlight, the rays of the sun, or the anything in the universe coming in. I'll put that out there. I can't, again, we can't prove that. Maybe someone can, but it's in the text of Scripture. And when it talks about the water in the heavens, well, it says, and the windows of the heavens were opened. Is that rain clouds and a storm? It could be. Or it could be with that water, the windows that was holding it up. In fact, the word means hammered in the original, in the earlier in the book of Genesis. It may have just came crashing down, especially if this water is blasting up through the atmosphere, touching what has been placed up there in some kind of a balanced place in a perfect universe, a perfect world, and all that water that's up there now gets tapped into, all that water comes crashing down. The water that has gone up, the atmosphere would be colder up there, freezing, and once it gets up there, it's going to turn to ice, it's going to turn to snow, and it's going to come down. What's coming out of this earth now, when the waters come up, is going to be the heat, magma, the volcanoes are erupting. And so you've also got volcanic ash, lava going up and heating the water. Now the water is being heated up. It's a catastrophe. The water's evaporating, filling the sky with now clouds, possibly, again, not going to say this for sure, possibly for the first time, you've got some kind of storm activity beginning. You've got water bursting up, you've got water falling down, you've got heat, volcanic activity heating the waters up to a place that it's evaporating very quickly. You're going to have serious global warming combined with falling ice. And now this all explains, you've heard those stories since you were a kid, that they found mammoths buried in ice chewing on vegetation from the tropics. I've never heard that. That they have found preserved, and they're chewing, they've got tropic vegetation on one of the, in a northern climate, buried in ice, and it's the ice age. It's like, no, this mammoth got buried instantly in ice and preserved with food in its mouth or in its belly. And so all of this is coming down, and combined with a tropical overheating, snow coming down, you're going to end up having ice forming on the earth that's going to cause was the ice age. And it's going to be setting up a stage for what's coming. Now, I've got to see if I can do this. See, you don't understand how many times I just thought this week, I'm just going to bring a video in and show you videos for the next 5 weeks. Because I'm going to draw something. Because I either going to show you a video and go, oh, that was interesting, or why'd even show us? You could just send it to you. Or I could do this. I could draw it with a marker. I'm going to draw it with a marker. So here it is. You've got the surface. This is the, we're going to say, the continental plate right here. And this continental plate, the fountains of the deep are going to burst forth up through here. Water's coming up. You could have, that's going up. You could have lava coming up. And now that is moving these apart. This continental plate now is moving apart, and it's becoming a wider gap. Okay, you see this? It's moving apart because of the pressure. Now it's moving. Okay? But now, because it's moving this way, let's go look at this area. Now over here, this plate is moving this way from the explosion over here. And over here, there's going to be another plate moving this way from some kind of pressure. Or these may have been up together like this. And the pressure of the fountains breaking forth on this side and the lava coming up. And on this side is pushing this together. So now there's continental plates pushing on each other. And it's like, wow, would this ever really happen? This is how mountains are formed. It's like, it's just a matter of, well, it took millions of years, or it happened this afternoon. I mean, that's the question. Did it happen all of a sudden? I'll tell you this. Again, my own personal research. I went to Colorado one time. First time in Colorado. And if you've been to Colorado, I'd never been to Colorado, so all I knew was cornfields and black dirt. And driving to Colorado, and as I drive through, you know, wherever I was, anywhere I was, but you can see like layers of rock, and then all of a sudden you come to some place where the rock is doing this. The layers of rock are like this. It's like, I mean, my first thought, again, this is not a scientific experiment, I just driving, and I look, it's like, I looked like a train wreck. I mean, I thought these rocks looked like they were in a train wreck. It's not like over millions of years, this rock slowly went up. It looks like just like some kind of tragedy has happened sometime in the past, and these layers of rock just collided and just popped up like out of nowhere. And that's what's going to happen right here. There's pressure here, or plates sliding together here, and they're going to have this huge pressure create heat, and something's going to buckle. It could, if this is pressing on this one, it could buckle back here. Right here, it buckles up like this, breaks, and now you've got mountains forming. Or you've got this taking place, which you can see today if you Google it, study it, look at it. This pressures, this breaks away, and this one goes up here and over like that. And this one gets sheared off and goes down under like this. And this is just cutting away at this continental plate. And you've got, you know, debris. You've got now just this jagged rock. You've got breakage going on. This is being forced down. This is taking place. Well, look at that on page 10. Those are the actual continental plates. Again, I drew it in 2007. Tectonic plates and the fault lines. And that is where you see today. That is where you've had a breaking of the continental plates. And if you take all the water off the earth, you're going to see mountains, of course, on the land, but you're also going to see mountains in the ocean. The top of the mountain in an ocean is an island. Or you're going to see valleys. So if the earth was covered with water, and all those mountains were formed, both above and below, and the valleys were formed. This is going to be creating valleys, as this is doing. When all that water starts draining off, it's going to run off the continents in a mad rush, a crazy rush. It's just going to the lowest point possible, which is going to be the oceans, which in a sense have just recently been created by the activity of the flood. The oceans are probably deeper after the flood, and the mountains are probably formed because of the flood. And so that's where you see, in that case right there, imagine North America being covered with water, and then all of a sudden everything starts settling down, and the water's trapped in a low spot in North America, and it breaks away from all the layers of sediment that have come up. Because every time there was an eruption, a tsunami, it's bringing up out of the water area, it's bringing up layers of life, of debris, of sediment. And then there'd be another tsunami, it would bring up another layer of this life. And they see this, they call it the fossil layer. And there's, you can say this is millions of years that these have been laid down, but like they say, the problem with fossils is it needs to be buried right away. If an animal... Well, think of an animal. If a raccoon gets hit by a car on the highway, you come back a few years later and sure enough you find a fossil there on the highway. No, because something is going to eat, if it be a vulture or if it be bugs, it's going to decay. The raccoon, it's not going to be turned to a fossil, it's going to disappear. All these layers, their images, their bodies, had to be laid down in mud in that condition and then preserved in rock. No time for decay, no time to be eaten by scavengers, in perfect examples. And their thing is, they are in layers of like life. Like you get further up, you get more and more of the land animals. They say it's the process of evolution. The problem is the fossils you find here match the animals we have in the earth today. With no what they're missing, the missing links. This now evolved into this thing today. It's like, you know, this thing is still here today, and we don't see any missing links connecting them. What you see in the fossil record is what we see in the world today, with some adaptation, if you would, not evolution, or extinction. And that goes all the way up. Now, if all that water would be trapped, for example, in North America, you know, a big, you know, several states of water, and this is all not rock yet, this is all just sediments that have been laid down in the last several weeks of the flood, and all of a sudden that water breaks loose and cuts through this. It's got to get to the lowest place in these deep oceans now. It's going to cut out a cavern, just cut these down, and it would form something exactly like the Grand Canyon. You'd see on one side looks like this, on the other side looks just like this, and then you just got this rushing water, and then you got this little bit of water running in the bottom. Well, that little bitty stream over billions of years eroded this away. The problem is you don't see any erosion. You see just cut straight, and you don't see piles of, you know, rocks that have fallen down. It's still got a stream there. It's like it's as if this thing was cut like in this afternoon. It's just like a huge water force just cut through it and found its place and left it standing there. And that is, you've got one of two options. It took millions of years, or it happened as the flood was receding suddenly. And then you find things in these rock layers, like trees that are standing up, you know, or you find other things that shouldn't be there that are, you know, like some kind of metal object tool of some sort that's billions of years old. It's like, how'd that get here? Well, it was buried, you know, back in the dinosaur day, or something took place there. Nonetheless, that is that verse, chapter 7, verse 11, is a dramatic verse. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, do you see the detail? That is not legend. That is not what you see here in legends or with the Native Americans telling the story of the flood. This is, Noah was 600 years old, which itself is ridiculous, but yet they write that. And then in the second month, so there's a calendar that someone was watching. On the 17th day of that month, on that day, says again, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth. Things started blasting out of the earth, and the windows of the heavens let down the water. They were open, and water began just crashing down. And now we have a chart that I spent some time on. And this is going to give you the days of the flood. What's coming up in chapter 7, you've got, if you look at page 11, and you look at page 12, that chart is on page 11 and part of page 12. On page 12, at the bottom of that chart, there's going to be 377 days recorded in Genesis chapter 7. Seven of those days are between when God says, in 7 days, I'm going to send the flood. In 7 days, the fountains of the deep are bursting. They're going to blast up into the atmosphere, and the waters in the above the heavens are going to come down, and you better be in the ark. So if you take away those 7 days, you've got 370 days of flood. And that includes the floods coming for 40 days, the water stopping, and then the water receding, and the earth drying up. It's going to take 370 days. And what you have right here, this is the chart. I'll read through this very quickly, and then we're going to have to stop. Genesis chapter 7, verses 4 and 10, they give you this information. For in 7 days I will send rain on the earth, 40 days and 40 nights. There's going to be 40 days and 40 nights of the continental plates shifting, the fountains of the deep bursting forth, stuff from the heavens falling down. I mean, you've got 40 days of just chaos, of tsunami after tsunami. After 7 days, the waters of the flood came up on the earth. So there's your two verses. Now, if you want to be if you want me to be cute, okay, you want me to be cute, I'll be cute. This year is 2458 according to our, we went through the timeline. That may be wrong, but our best date is 2458 is the flood. Now, it says it was, if you look back at that verse, it says the second month, the 17th day. So the second month would be 2, 10, 2458. And going through that, the second month, I have to do this next week if you care. Go to page 12. Are you okay? I'm going to have to wrap this up because after talking about the continental plates, the different classes of animals, and all the other things, the dimensions of the ark and how to build a ship, I don't know anything about any of those things. I'm now going to talk about calendars. Do you understand? Do you feel how much information is involved in this? I mean, I'm teaching the Bible, but I've got to understand the animal kingdom. I've got to understand the continental plates. I've got to understand building ships and the dimensions, unless I'm just going to read it to you and say, here's what happened. But if you're going to try to find some, like when I start talking about events and we got the Babylonians here and we've got this king here, we got this inscription here, I can draw from that. But when I look at this chapter, I guess this is chapter 6 and 7 is, for me, one of the biggest challenges of teaching, unless you're just going to read it like a Sunday school story. But if you're going to slow down and apply science and research to it, you're going to have several, you know, very well-educated people to handle the details. And when they get done, you won't be able to mock this story. You're going to have to just bow your knee and say, come, Lord Jesus. Just like he brought the flood, Jesus Christ is coming back on the other side of history, and he's going to do the same thing. But this time, it's not going to be the rain that comes. It's going to be his presence that comes. And it's going to cause, it's still going to be topography changes. Islands are going to disappear. The heavens are going to shake. Stars are going to fall. It's going to be catastrophic when he comes. And we want to be in the ark or saved. Okay. Last thing tonight, and then we got to pick this up next week. Page 12 at the bottom. These are, the Jewish calendar has the civic month and the religious month. And if you go with the civic month, the year civic begins in what we would call September, October. And the first month in the civic year is, in the fall, Tishri. And the second month is Heshvan, or Keshvan, with a CH sound. And that would be the second month. So when it says the second month, it's talking about, in the civic month, it's talking about Heshvan, around October, December, or October, November. But if you go with the religious calendar, the first month is Nisan, March, April. Like that is when Jesus was crucified. That is beginning that feast right there, March, April. And the second month is Iyar, which is April, May. Again, they're not exactly with our months. These are all 30-day months. So you got 360 days a year, 12 months with 30 days. So there's going to be some calendar adjustment going on because of the lunar. So when it says the second month, it could be Heshvan, which would be October, November, or it could be Ira, April or May, if you're doing the religious. Most likely it's the civic month because, one, that matches the Akkadian calendar. And two, the religious month was established by Moses. So we turn the page. We got one more look at the calendar. And there I've got written down for you the number of the month, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 12. The religious calendar and the Akkadian calendar. Now, when we talk about Akkadian, that's what we're talking about. Sargon, Nimrod, these guys. These are the Akkadians, the Sumerians that wrote all these tablets. Their calendar matches the Jewish religious calendar. Very similar names in some cases. And I've got right beside that the Gregorian, our calendar. So, for example, the second month would be Iyah, the Jewish religious calendar. Oh, excuse me. I said it was a civic calendar. Or Akkadian, Aru, and that would be our April, roughly. If you go if the second month, and it's on the other side with the civic calendar, it would be Heshvan or Kesvan in October. So nonetheless, here we go. I'll say this and I'm done. The flood begins on the 17th day of Noah's 600th year in the second month. That would be the year 2458, if I've calculated correctly. And so that date, do I have it written down somewhere? I have it somewhere. And the flood is going to end on the 27th day of the second month, 1 year later. So in the year 2457, and all that is going to be broken down in greater detail. We're going to pick this up next week. I think I've got written on there, yes, I did. Page 11. It's a Genesis 7, the gray box going across the top of the page 11. The 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, on the 17th day of the month, the flood began. That would be, according to dating it in those months, it'd be the second month, the 17th of 2458 BC. You can plug this into an online calendar of the Hebrews, and that would be Wednesday, November 6th, the month of Heshvan, the 17th of 2458 BC. So it'd be our November 6th, or the Jews, Heshvan the 17th in the year 2458. So now you know. When you go to church on Sunday, you can tell them you know the date the flood began, November 6th, 2458 BC. I wouldn't tell that to anybody outside this room, but I mean, that's how close you, I mean, and that's not a wild guess. That's just putting all the things together. That's how much detail we've got, and it would be fun to take some kind of NASA's space system and do the clock back and see what takes place in the world, the universe at that time, if there's some I was reading someone that was talking about Mars. They think Mars has gone under. Here's a scientist. This is the one article I was reading. It's funny because science mocks a worldwide flood. That's ridiculous. But yet when they look at Mars, guess what they say about Mars? Mars has suffered a universal flood because they can see the water, the water runs and the remains of where water has stood on the planet, that at one time apparently the Mars was totally underwater, according to some scientists. Say, well, so that could have happened to Earth. Oh, that's ridiculous. That's stupid. It's amazing. We have water on Earth. There's no water on Mars. But science will believe that Mars was underwater at one point, but while they're riding around in their yachts, it's like, oh, no, the Earth could never get underwater. It's like, what's up with this? Okay, maybe the water from Mars came to Earth and flooded the Earth. I don't know. No, I don't think that. It's enough weird stuff have been said tonight. I'm gonna pray and get out of here. We'll try and clean this up next week and get on to chapter 8 and talk about Bible. If you have any questions or thoughts, please let me know. Father, we do thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for your word. We do ask that we may handle your word diligently, that we would honor and respect you, but not become weird and crazy with strange ideas, but walk in the truth and allow truth, science, reality to speak and explain the scriptures to us as you continue to reveal your word and your will to us. We look forward to the return of Jesus Christ and ask that we would be indeed in fellowship and doing the things you've called us to upon his return. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your patience.